A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. It has been a bit since we've had a show. So last Thursday, unfortunately, my power was out pretty much all day Thursday, so couldn't do a show last Thursday. Producer Jim was off on President's Day and yesterday, so we are finally all back on the same page, and I gotta say, I am very pleased that Rick Travis from the California Rifle and Pistol Association is going to be joining us here in a moment or two. I actually had the chance to sit down with Rick on Tuesday afternoon to talk about some of the new bills that have been filed in California. Not only the attacks on our right to keep and bear arms, but there are actually some good bills that have been introduced as well, including a couple that may actually be able to make their way to Governor Gavin Newsom's desk, despite the dominance of anti-gun Democrats in Sacramento. There are, I think the CRPA is getting pretty savvy at running bills in a very unfriendly environment. Not only do we talk, though, about the legislative action going on in Sacramento, but California Rifle and Pistol Association is come up with something really cool to celebrate the 250th anniversary of the Battle of Lexington and Concord, which is going to be happening, of course, April 19th. Rick talks about that as well in our conversation. Take a look and a listen. Rick, thanks so much for coming to the program today. It's good to see you, sir.
Good to see you. So happy to be here.
You know, and I got to tell you, I was writing a story not long ago about the, so far anyway, 9 gun control bills that have been introduced in New York State this session. And so many of them, Rick, came from California. Uh-huh. I mean, it's crazy. You've got the 1 in 30 gun rationing law, which, by the way, has been put on hold in California, right? Right. You've got a micro-stamping mandate that's been introduced in New York. That, too, has been put on hold in California. Under 21 gun bans, all kinds of things. And, you know, in my story, I said that California is not only an incubator of gun control, it's an exporter of gun control legislation. So let me ask, what are you guys dealing with this year that gun owners around the country may have to deal with in the months ahead?
Well, I think one of the things, too, about what you said that gets missed by a lot of people in our community is they hone, you know, a lot of these bills, we call them zombie bills here in California because we fight them for 3, 4, or 5, sometimes as many as 7 years, like the excise tax that raised 11%. The opposition gets to hear all of our opposition to the bills, hone that out. So when they go to another state, that state doesn't have the same advantage we did to try to slow it down, to fight it and stuff. They already have all the answers because they learned from fighting us. And so that's why a lot of times I say, you got to help us stop it in California, because when it goes, it not only goes, but it goes like an Energizer bunny. It's all like tapped out.
Absolutely. No, it's a fantastic point. And we certainly do appreciate you fighting the good fight there in California. And, you know, honestly, I mean, despite the odds that are stacked against you in Sacramento, you all are able to get a lot done, and not just in the courts, right? I mean, obviously, the courts are a backstop, a huge backstop in California, and CRPA has been so successful in its litigation and so aggressive in its litigation. But you all have been able to, again, you know, even if it's in some cases pushing these bills back, as you say, 4, 5, 6, 7 years, that is a victory in and of itself, because every year that these bad laws aren't on the books, every year that we don't have to challenge them in court, we don't have to spend fees on attorneys and finding expert witnesses and things of that nature, that is a win. And so, again, thank you for all of the work that you're doing. But let's get back to what's going on in Sacramento this session. I know we've got some good bills to talk about. But
yeah, we have good bills. We have some things that I want to explain to people. One of them is that we have to start looking at legislation across the country, kind of the way we do here in California. And that is, it's very easy to have a myopic viewpoint, Cam, like, oh, do they have a bill against FFLs, or do they have a bill against youth and guns? What's not so easy is the nuanced approach of the far left of, oh, we're going to go after land issues, we're going to go after dogs, we're going to go after this, because they're nitpicking things on the side that we don't see out of a traditional 2A mindset. But like last year, actually started 2 years ago, we had a member of the assembly saying, hey, you know, sporting dogs are kind of like dogs that you would see at puppy mills. And I'm like, wait, what? No. But a lot of my colleagues missed that one. And I went and said, no, you're not going to see a Labrador Retriever pup being pushed around in a cart. Like, that doesn't happen. That's a puppy mill dog. Labs aren't puppy mill dogs. but they were only going after sporting dogs. And then they went to go try to put a ban on importing sporting dogs to California. Well, you have to go, well, how does that relate? Well, it relates because if you don't have a sporting dog, you can't pick up the game that you've taken in the field, which means now you have wanton waste, which means now you can't hunt and you lose your gun right. Like that was the whole back door. And we proved that. We opened it up. So we still have some bills that are trying to limit dogs in California, which man's best friend, you'd think this is the stupidest thing, but they try everything under the sun to go after that. They've been going after federal firearms license dealers, trying to push them out. And one of the bills that we have that is coming out is from the Assembly and the Senate. But in the Senate, just a second, I'm going to that bill for you. It's a Senate Bill 15. It's put out by Catherine Blakespear. And here's her ploy. She's masked this in like, hey, we're trying to make California safe. And in doing so, what we're looking for is the 10 FFLs that have the most firearms that end up in crime. So she wants to create the 10 worst FFL list in California. And if you end up on that list, you get 50% more fines as decided by the Department of Justice, and you lose your ability to sell anything for 2 years. Which anybody knows in a business, 2 years, you've lost your lease, you've lost everything. You are out of business.
Yeah.
And this is part of trying to wipe out the culture of firearms ownerships and being able to. So like when they get blocked somewhere else, they try to find another loophole. And this is the newest loophole. It's obviously unconstitutional. It's obviously rife. But then they also go to the stupid side of things. If that wasn't stupid, here's one for you. Senate Bill 320, and it's the do not sell list. So in California, we have a list of who you can't sell firearms to. And it's generally speaking, people that have mental issues, criminal issues, et cetera. Well, now, you know, Cam, you might wake up one morning and go, I don't want anyone to sell a gun to me. So can I voluntarily put myself on the list and voluntarily take it off? And so that's what they're trying to do.
We have this in Virginia already, Rick. We're actually ahead of you on this anti-gun legislation. And I got to tell you, it's been, I think, a year since I reached out to the Virginia State Police. This has been on the books for a couple of years. I think after it had been on the books for about 12 months, I reached out to the VSP and asked, you know, how many people have put themselves on the list? And it was four. Mm-hmm. Four people. That was it. So, I mean, as you say, this is absurd, right? The voluntary do not sell list. But let's go back to that other bill that you mentioned by the FFLs, because this is downright dangerous, right? Yeah. Senate Bill 15. Okay. So we've seen the anti-gunners over the past couple of years. You know, they've really used that sort of demand to program from the ATF to try to name and shame FFLs that they say are responsible for, you know, an outsized number of crime guns, quote unquote. But when you look at this data, the ATF itself says, listen, just because a gun has been traced is not evidence that the gun stored did anything wrong. Right. High volume dealers are more likely to have more traces. But, you know, I was talking to Eric Delbert from LAPD Firearms and Range in Columbus, Ohio, not long ago, because his store was on the list. And he's a law enforcement officer. You know, he takes this pretty personally. So he started looking at the disposition of some of these traces, and several of them were firearms that had been stolen, you know, after months after they'd been sold. Right. There were other individuals that or other traces that were not crime traces. Right. A person was stopped. They had a firearm on them. The gun was traced by the officer there at the scene, but there was no crime that had been committed. So this is fundamentally flawed from the very beginning, right? Because you can be the number one FFL on that list. That doesn't mean you've done anything wrong.
Right.
But then if you look at this, the way you're describing this, so this is the top 10, right? So that means every year there are going to be 10 FFLs that get put out of business by the state of California. It doesn't matter if two traces puts them on the top 10 list. The state of California is, if this bill passes, in essence saying every year we're going to put 10 gun stores out of business.
Right.
Jiminy Christmas, Rick. I mean, that is scary.
Yeah, it's very scary. That's what we're up against.
All right. As you say, that's pretty clearly unconstitutional. I know that Chuck Michelle is probably champion of the bit to sue if this bill becomes law. Let's hope that we can keep it bottled up. But Before we got started recording here, you mentioned that there were actually some bills where CRPA and gun owners are going on offense this session.
Yes. And so this is one of the things that we really are encouraging other states to do. We went deep. We got involved with over 1,700 elections during this election cycle. Got our volunteers out helping to get people across. We flipped some seats, got some new people in, and then immediately went to work with those new people. So we have Heather Hadwick, who was elected to the assembly up in the very top of the state. She is carrying a bill to help FFL. So in California, we have two different laws when an FFL, especially like a large chain. We have a group called Turner's, Bass Pro would be another one, Sportsman's Warehouse out here in California. And when they go into a shopping center and get in there, the back doors for security, the fire code says you have to have a panic bar where the people can get out if there's a fire or some tragedy. And of course, DOJ says, no, it's got to be bolted shut, look like something out of medieval times because it was in the 1980s that law was written. So those laws become in conflict. Well, for years, the DOJ agents acquiesced to whatever the fire marshal wanted so that they could open up their store. Well, our Attorney General Bonta, who is anti the Trump administration, anti everything about us, has said, no, we're going back to the 1980 rules. And so they started fining FFLs up to $1,500 a day for a bad door, even though to comply with them.
A bad door, right, yeah.
Even though to comply with them makes it an illegal door with the fire department. So this put them in a bad situation. She has ran a bill, Assembly Bill 584, that corrects that and brings it down that DOJ has to put in writing, give the courts a time to look at to say why those doors do not meet all of their needs and the fire code needs. And so this is an area that we're going in trying to help FFLs and also trying to set the record straight of some common sense because we haven't had much of that.
Yeah.
Another bill that we have that we're coming out with is done by Leticia Castillo. It's Assembly Bill. We get the number today, but it will be taking us from 2 years to 4 years on your CCW. So in California, it's been a two-year cycle. It's made it very hard for some of the larger departments to have 40,000 CCWs because it's 20,000 renewals without taking on anybody new every year. Mm-hmm. So moving into a four-year, we'll spread that out. And so this is a very positive bill and is helping us to handle that. So we're excited about that.
Yeah. And not just those departments, Rick. I mean, I know that, again, CRPA is suing over the excessive fees that some departments are charging. Mm-hmm. But if it's costing you $1,000 to apply initially, right, and then it's costing you $600-$700 to renew every 2 years.
Yeah.
I mean, again, some people are being priced out of their Second Amendment rights. So right, 4 years, 5 years, a longer term. Right. And again, we can argue about whether or not these licensing regimes are constitutional to begin with, right, but that's, I think, a different animal altogether.
Yeah.
This at least is going to give gun owners some financial relief, particularly right, those living in these, places where these excessive fees are in place and are being challenged in court. So that is another good bill. Good.
And then we have another one that's so common sense. It's from Assembly Bill number 68 from Asaley, and that is that school safety officers should be armed to protect our children.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are they not in California?
No, they're not.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I guess they're just hall monitors at that point, basically.
Pretty much.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, well, this, listen, and I say, and you say this is common sense, but I imagine that's going to be fairly controversial in Sacramento.
It is. It's going to be very controversial, and we're going to have to push to get across. Then we also have the leader of the Republican Party, Senator Jones, who right now is looking at six or seven bills. We have till Friday to get them in, but he has already put a bill marker in, which is called a spot bill, 397, to push firearms across the board. And then we have three other bills that are being ginned up for next year already. One of those is we will actually be able to carry concealed. We haven't been able to carry concealed while hunting cam. For 5 years, we got everything but deer hunting covered. And now we have a bill to get deer hunting. We got Department of Fish and Wildlife, our Fish and Game Commission, which is very left-leaning, to finally sign off on it and said, no, this makes sense. People need to be able to protect themselves. So as a result, it looks like that bill is going to go through. We have another bill that's very near and dear to me, especially more so now that, like you, I have a wife that is fighting cancer. I know you went through that for several years. And this bill is for children who have pediatric cancer and have been given less than a year to live to be able to hunt, fish, or shoot, even if it's off season. And so the idea is to fulfill that final wish. It was staggering to me when we got into it. We have 26 children's hospitals that deal with pediatric cancer in the state, and each of them average 200 to 300 kids every 4 months that do not get to have, and that was their wish, was to be able to do one of those three things. So,
oh, wow.
It's thousands of kids a year, which that's just heartbreaking in of itself, but realizing that this is a basic thing. We've got some kids who want to go testify as their final wish to be able to help other kids that follow after them. So it's a gut-wrenching bill for me to carry. And it's not the easiest bill. I've cried many times, have no problems admitting that. And then the last bill we have is, there's so much lying that goes on when it comes to science in the area of hunting and firearms. And so this will establish a wildlife council that will take $2 from fishing and hunting licenses to establish a separate council of just pure science to be able to market that science to the public so that they're better informed when it comes time to vote.
Okay. Wow. Well, listen, I got to tell you, I mean, that is a, I like these offensive bills. And again, they make sense from a common sense perspective. Yeah. The bill dealing with those pediatric cancer patients, I mean, that definitely tugs on the heartstrings. And I hope that the cold-hearted, calloused anti-gunners in Sacramento are able to, you know, see some light on that. And personally, Liz, I mean, I'll talk with you about this off air as well. But please know that you and your wife are in my prayers. That I can do to help you, I'm here. Yeah. All right. So we could talk, I'm sure, more about legislation all afternoon. But there is something else that I want to talk about. I am wearing a Somerset Patriots hat today. We are, I guess when this airs, because we're actually recording this on Tuesday. So by the time this airs on Wednesday, we're going to be 2 months shy of the 250th anniversary of the Shot Heard Around the World, the Battle of Lexington and Concord. And out there on the West Coast, CRPA, you're not letting Massachusetts have all the fun. You're getting involved in a very big way, right?
Yeah. So what we've done is we've got over 30 ranges statewide that on the morning of Saturday, April 19th at 8:30, are collecting patriots and people. We have VIPs. We have people from some of the groups like Daughters of the American Revolution, Sons of the American Revolution, bringing some reenactors. And we are at one point firing. There'll be in every 5 minute increments. We're going to do it for about a half hour to let everybody fire that shot heard around the world. We have come up with a glow in the dark patch that commemorates the 250th anniversary, which I'll be sending one out to you, Cam. And we're just trying to get this going. And as we've been doing that, we've had other states like North Dakota found out about us, gave us credit, said, hey, CRPA, start us up. We want to do it. We have Utah doing it, Idaho, and we have some people in Texas talking about doing it. Maybe after this airs, others will join us with it. But this is an idea for everybody to remember. What we've been pushing is there's several great patriotic stories that come out of that day's battles. But we had men and women, young people in their 70s, which back in 1775 was ancient, who, you know, all the taxes, the Boston Massacre, those were never reasons to reject their form of government. But when they came to take their guns at Lexington and Concord, that was the reason. That was the catalyst to go from being British citizens to becoming what we now call ourselves Americans. And so we think in doing that, realizing that gun control is what we were founded on, we're still finding it 250 years later and realize that those are our roots and celebrate those roots.
I think that's tremendous. And I hope that there are folks in other states that see this and say, you know what, I want to do this myself or at least get involved. Can they reach out to CRPA? I mean, if they want to be affiliated with this, how do they do that?
CRPA.org, and we have it up on the page. They can call us and we'll help them coordinate it and get started. But it's fairly simple, fairly easy, and it's something we should all be doing to kick off the 250th anniversary.
Absolutely.
It's a once-in-a-lifetime thing.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I will be in Massachusetts on April 19th. If I wasn't there, I'd be flying out to California to take part in this event. But I will do my part in firing a shot. If I don't do it in Massachusetts, I'll sneak in a shot the day before on the 18th. We'll just It'll be my Paul Revere. The Redcoats are coming. It'll be the preview. Rick, again, thank you for everything that you're doing there in California, helping to preserve what Second Amendment rights remain and helping to restore those Second Amendment rights that have been lost in California. CRPA is truly doing incredible work. You've got a great team and you are a linchpin of that team, especially there in Sacramento. So again, thank you for everything that you're doing.
Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, God my bless. Pleasure. We'll do it again very soon. Rick Travis joining us from a CRPA here on Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. My thanks to Rick for joining us on the program. Looking forward to having him back again here very soon. All right, let's turn our attention now to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. I actually had to write about this at Bearing Arms because this was so egregious. Here's the headline from CBS in Pittsburgh. Suspect in new Kensington gun store robbery sentenced to more than a year in prison. Oh, my, more than a year. Yeah, 20 months was the sentence, but because the individual in question, Michael Ginn, has been sitting behind bars since last January when he was arrested, he's actually going to do about 7 months more. And then he'll be cut loose on 3 years of supervised probation. This is a federal case brought by Joe Biden's DOJ and stems from a burglary that happened last year, January 22nd, 2024. Again, accused of crashing a pickup truck through the front door of RC Firearms in New Kensington, Pennsylvania. Investigators say that he had an alleged accomplice with him, 19-year-old Stein Sardui, who then ran inside and smashed the front door. Again, went in after him. According to prosecutors, once inside the building, the two vandalized the store, stole 24 guns before driving off. When he was questioned, Ginn initially tried to blame the robbery on Sardi and his dad, but investigators determined that he, too, had played a role in this smash-and-grab robbery. Sardi was picked up by authorities on an active warrant for a probation violation. He confessed to the burglary. He also got a plea deal, by the way, 2.5 years in prison. He gave authorities a detailed description of what happened before and after. He told investigators that Ginn was the second person involved and that the burglary was Ginn's idea. He also told authorities that he and Ginn had split the firearms that they stole. They each got a dozen firearms. Now, Ginn is also a previously convicted felon, so he's not allowed to legally possess a firearm. He's certainly not allowed to steal 12 firearms. Possession of a firearm by a convicted felon under federal law is punishable by up to 10 years in prison. Possession of a stolen firearm, or at least stealing a firearm, the act of stealing a firearm, is also punishable by up to 10 years in prison under federal law. So if prosecutors had really wanted to nail Ginn, right, they could have, A, refused the plea deal, taken this case to trial. They could have asked the judge in this case to sentence Ginn to consecutive terms. And I'm not saying that that would have happened, but they could have requested that. Instead, the Biden-appointed U.S. attorney for the Western District of Pennsylvania took this plea deal and took it before, by the way, he resigned the day before Donald Trump took office. So we now have a new acting U.S. attorney in Western Pennsylvania. And hopefully plea deals like this will be a thing of the past. But, you know, again, we spent the last 4 years with the Biden administration launching this whole of government attack on gun owners, on the firearms industry, and at the same time, that they're accusing, you know, bad apple gun dealers and rogue gun dealers of putting guns on the street. What happens when they catch a guy who used a car to smash into the front of an FFL, steal a couple of dozen guns? What do? They offer him a sweetheart plea deal. They give him a slap on the wrist. And they send him along in his merry way. Now, again, hopefully there is a new day and a new attitude at DOJ when it comes to prosecuting these types of crimes and leaving lawful gun owners in the firearms industry alone, but this is just another reminder of how twisted and warped the priorities of the Biden administration really were when it came to going after quote-unquote gun offenders. Today's Armed Citizen story from St. Louis County, Missouri, where a man accused of breaking into an apartment, who was then shot after breaking into that apartment, is now facing charges. Now, it took a while for these charges to develop, I will say. Fox 2 in St. Louis reporting that the break-in actually occurred last May 16th, 2024, in an apartment complex in Breckenridge Hills, Missouri. When police arrived on the scene, they found Martin Thiongo with a gunshot wound to his leg on the bedroom floor of an apartment. Investigators learned that Thiongo, who also lives in that same complex, had forced his way into the apartment chased the tenant into the bedroom, allegedly saying that he wanted to kill the guy. But that's when the apartment dweller was able to grab a firearm and shoot Thiongo in self-defense. The resident of the apartment, not facing any charges, Thiongo is. St. Louis County Prosecuting Attorney's Office has charged Thiongo only with first-degree burglary. So nothing about, you know, attempted murder or attempted assault or anything like that, which is questionable in and of itself, but maybe they think that's the charge that they can get to stick. So first-degree burglary, he was issued a criminal summons to appear in court on March 18th. And again, we'll keep our eyes open for any potential plea deals that might arrive from this case. But the apartment dweller in question, again, not facing any charges for acting in self-defense last May. Finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. A man and his dog in Lower Burl, Pennsylvania, also out in Western PA, who helped save a man who had been trapped in his car for over 12 hours, according to authorities. Michael Tutulo is the good Samaritan in question. He said, I kind of figured, why didn't he beep the horn or make a lot of noise or something? Why was he still there? He said, but we found out later he was fairly old. There was no cell phone. Fairly old, yeah. 86-year-old man trapped in his vehicle for 15 hours, did not have a phone, couldn't call for help. Temperatures below freezing. And Tutulo was out walking his dog when he saw this Jeep about 200 yards off of the roadway. So we saw the car and all around it was ice. He said, so we couldn't open the doors. It was all fogged up. But my dog was going crazy barking. So I figured somebody must be there. And he said, I thought I saw the brake light, but I wasn't quite sure. But he went ahead and he contacted authorities. Police responded. They found Lawrence Conklin inside the vehicle. He was responsive, but according to police, showing signs of hypothermia. Lowell Burl of Volunteer Fire Company Deputy Chief Scott Glower says, we utilized a Stokes basket and a rope system to get him to a flat area. Then we put him into a pickup truck to get him the rest of the way to the ambulance. According to CBS in Pittsburgh, nearby residents said that there were no signs of an accident that would have been cause for concern. And again, this was 200 yards off of the roadway, so it might not even have been visible from the street. But thankfully, Mr. Tutulo and his 2-year-old mini doodle Oliver in the right place at the right time, willing able to do the right thing. Tutulo says he was just barking constantly. That's what he does whenever he sees something. He hears things, animals, I don't know, but it seemed like something and someone was still there. Conklin's daughter, Allie Cunningham, spoke to CBS in Pittsburgh. She said that her dad was on his way to visit a friend when they think that a drop in his blood sugar level led to the accident. Glora said, the fire chief said, he did tell us that he was there since around 5 o'clock last night. So he was lucky his car was running for a while. But when we got there, the car was out of gas and had shut off. So you may very well be dealing with winter weather. And I'm sure you probably already know this, but this is a good opportunity to remind you, make sure that your cars are filled up. I can tell you, I mean, it's snowing right now in Central Virginia. We're not going to get a lot of snow. A couple of days ago, they were predicting 13 inches. I think now it's about down to like 2.5. So not a big deal. But I got to tell you, again, we lost power last Thursday. We lose power on a fairly regular basis out here. And we're on well water. So when we lose power, we lose water too. So I've got my pre-storm checklist, and it involves filling up the bathtub. So we've got water to flush the toilets and, you know, things of that nature. We've always got a supply of drinking water on hand. But I go and I make sure that all of our vehicles are filled up so that if we do lose power, like today, the high is only going to be 24. It's supposed to get down to, I think, 11 degrees. It's not supposed to get above freezing until probably Friday afternoon. So I make sure that the cars are all gassed up so that if we need to leave the house and warm up, we can at least go out to our vehicles, start the cars, and sit there and be warm and dry for a little while. Again, that's just common sense. A lot of folks, you know, may get busy, may think, I don't really need to do it. But again, you never know when bad things can happen. But thankfully, again, in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing there in Western PA, Michael Tutulo and his mini doodle Oliver, 2 years old. What's that in human years? 17? I think the first year is 10 years, right? So teenager Oliver in the right place at the right time, unable to help out a stranger in need. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I want to thank you, as always, for being a part of the program. I'm looking forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow. Not sure who our guest will be. I may just end up flying solo. We got a lot of stuff to talk about regardless, but looking forward to seeing you here. And if you like what you see, I'd encourage you to check out BearingArms.com. We're keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. You can also become a VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum member. We do our weekly VIP Gold live chat with Hot Air's Ed Morrissey every Wednesday at 1:30 p.m. Would love for you to be a part of that next week. Just, again, all you have to do, become a VIP Gold, VIP Platinum member for Town Hall Media. You'll get all kinds of exclusive benefits and exclusive stories, early access. Again, all kinds of great additions when you become a VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum member. And, of course, you're also going to be supporting the independent pro Second Amendment journalism we do at Bearing Arms, and we greatly appreciate that support. So thank you again. Enjoy the rest of your Hump Day Wednesday. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.